You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Ray Abilea, the co-director for Code Pink. Ray, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Ray, I just read something recently about the lawsuit that you instituted last year because of being assaulted in the Congressional Gallery by an AIPAC supporter being settled. But before we get into that, for the benefit of the listeners, just give them a little bit of background about what is Code Pink and what do you do for them?
Sure. Well, Code Pink Women for Peace is a women-led peace and justice group. We've been around for almost 10 years. We started in response to the lead-up to the Iraq War and then-President Bush's color-coded terror alerts, the Code Red, Code Orange, Code Yellow. We said we don't want to live in a fear-mongering, violence-based society, and we declared a Code Pink alert for peace. And for years since then, we've been working to end U.S. wars and occupations, specifically in Iraq and Afghanistan. We now lead a international campaign to oppose drone warfare in Pakistan, Somalia, Yemen, and domestic use of drones for spying and violating our civil liberties. We're well known for being in the face of power, speaking up for justice and peace, and doing creative street protests to try to redirect our federal budget, our precious tax dollars, away from the bloated Pentagon budget and into life-affirming activities like healthcare, education, green jobs, parks, libraries, etc., the things that really keep us healthy and secure here at home rather than destroying the lives of communities in the Middle East and throughout the world.
Yeah.
And our website is codepink.org.
Kind of makes sense, yeah.
Not a bad idea.
Yeah, I guess. And now the last time we spoke was, I guess, a little bit over a year ago. And at that point, you were the Middle East coordinator for Code Pink. And, of course, now you're the co-director. Congratulations. And in that interview, well, thank you for what you're doing because it's really great. And in that interview, we talked about how you were assaulted in May when Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu received 58 standing ovations up and down, 29, by a supporter of AIPAC. And in that interview, we talked about a lot of things. And one of the interesting things that you brought up, and I don't expect you to remember this, but I'll bring it up, your uncle has some very significant Israeli history. What about him?
Well, actually, it's interesting, Dave. I've had an opportunity to get to know my uncle more frequently, recently, actually, through reading a biography about him. He was an Israeli pacifist. His name was Joseph Abilea, my grandfather's brother. He grew up in Haifa when it was Palestine, and he was from a family of musicians. He became quite a renowned violin viola player, and through his music, found harmony and found interfaith community. He played music with Palestinian Arabs and Jews alike. And when the partition happened, he really opposed the separation of the Jewish state from the rest of the people who were inhabiting the land at that time. And he became the first conscientious objector known in Israeli history. In 1948, he refused to sign up for the draft. And the legal system really didn't know what to do with him at that time. And he continued to be an outspoken advocate for pacifism and for equal rights for everyone in the region. And he really advocated for a trans-Jordan, sort of a one-state solution, but with what's now Israel, the West Bank, Gaza, and Jordan in mind. And was really respected and admired by people of all faiths and around the world. So since Code Pink has taken on the issue of Israel and Palestine, really after the assault of Gaza in 2008, we took this on more seriously, looking at the $3 billion of our tax dollars that go into the military aid to Israel annually that helps to support the occupation of the West Bank and the siege of Gaza. I've been doing more work around this issue, and as my name has gotten out in the media, I start getting phone calls, emails from people all over the world that say, oh, Ray Abilea, are you related to Joseph? And it's been profound and amazing to connect with elders who worked with my great uncle and to feel that I'm really carrying on some ancestral legacy in doing the peace work that I'm doing now through my work at Code Pink and my volunteering at Jewish Voice for Peace.
Yeah, that's great. That's terrific. I wanted to bring that up because that's pretty amazing, that historical connection.
Yeah, he was an incredible man, really committed to nonviolence. I mean, there's a joke about him that Joseph never got his driver's license, so he always rode around on his scooter. And the reason for that is every time he had to take a driving test, he would get to an intersection, and at the time there were no stoplights, just stop signs, and he would wait for everyone else to go across the intersection before he would go. So he would fail the test every time because he was just so patient and kind.
What a nice guy.
Yeah.
Would have liked to have met him.
Very sweet.
So last May, I think it was May 24th, you basically, I re-listened to the interview, and I know I spent quite a bit of time talking about it with you. You basically got the crap kicked out of you, to put it bluntly. You were pulled down. You got your neck wrenched. You had to go to the hospital. You're still experiencing pain from that. And this was all from holding up a banner and asking for equal rights for Palestinians. And on top of it, you were then read your rights while you were in a gurney. I don't know if you were arrested, but you were charged with inciting violence, I guess, in Congress, something like that, right?
Yeah, well, the way you put it, it does sound stranger than fiction, but it is reality, in fact. Yeah, last year on May 24th, Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu was speaking to a joint session of Congress, the House and Senate, and I had a very prized ticket to see this speech. And I was sitting in the Congressional Gallery, and Netanyahu was speaking about the politics of the Middle East, and I was becoming more and more incensed at the lies that he was saying. And I stood up, unfurled a banner that said, "Occupying land is indefensible," and I shouted, "No more occupation, equal rights for Palestinians." And as I had the pink banner out and I was standing up saying this, a man sitting a few seats to my right tried to grab the banner out of my hand and hurled me into the row of seats in front of me, and then proceeded to gag me and twist my neck. And the police escorted me out of the building, took me to the hospital, and then while I was getting x-rays and CAT scans for my neck injury, they read me my Miranda rights and shackled me to the hospital bed and told me that I was being arrested for disruption of Congress, which actually is a legal issue. And I was taken from the hospital to the jail cell, not exactly your favorite place to be when you've just been assaulted. And over the past year, I have been trying to hold the person accountable who did this to me. And for a while, I had a civil lawsuit against a John Doe because I didn't know the identity of the person. But because there is such high security in the Capitol building, I was able to subpoena from the Capitol Police and the district attorney records that showed who was sitting in which seats. And I was also able to work with the detectives at the Capitol Police to put an arrest warrant out for the man who assaulted me. And once we knew his identity as a man named Stanley Schulster, we found out that indeed he is a member of AIPAC, a volunteer lobbyist, and also a veteran in the Israeli Defense Forces and the U.S. Navy. So this is a military man, a retired lawyer, a seasoned political lobbyist who thinks that it's okay to wage violence on people whose opinions he doesn't agree with and to attack young women. And I found that absolutely unacceptable.
Wow. That's cool that you were able to locate the guy the way that you did. That's really neat. And this is from an article actually that came out today. Stanley A. Schulster, 73, I guess he's from Oregon. This fellow, you said, was not only in the United States Navy, but he served in the Israeli military?
That's right. There was a bio of Mr. Schulster that we found online on a Republican website from Oregon. I guess he was a featured speaker at this local Republican community, and in his bio it said that he was a volunteer veteran from the Israeli Defense Forces. And it also in his bio had some bragging about actually his attack of me, that he, I think it said he assisted in the subduing of the protester and that this made news. Yeah, I think his bio said he grabbed the woman who heckled the prime minister while he was speaking. So it is creepy that someone would brag about that kind of violence,
I find that
very problematic. There was also an article that came out right after the incident last May where Rabbi Shmuley Boteach, a well-known author, wrote this book, Kosher Sex. He's an Orthodox rabbi, and he wrote an article about his moral dilemma of whether or not to assault me. Now, I would think a rabbi would be having a moral dilemma of whether or not to intervene and stop violence, if anything, but pretty shocking and just highlights, I think, how nationalist fervor around Israel sometimes fogs people's better instincts toward humanity and compassion, nonviolence, and if nothing else, just upholding the law.
Yeah, absolutely. That's right. And I remember when that happened, we brought that up about that rabbi. And yeah, you're right. It does obviously cloud them. And you would think that a rabbi would be more clear-headed and more level-headed when making such a statement or even thinking about something like that. But I was just surprised that this fellow, who I guess is an American, Schulster is an American, how can an American not just serve in the United States Navy, but also serve in the Israeli armed forces?
It's possible to volunteer in the Israeli Defense Forces as an American citizen.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow.
And it's a common thing to do in certain communities within the American Jewish community.
Really? Okay. Thank you.
And it's also very easy for American Jews or Jews living in the diaspora around the world to get citizenship to Israel. And I find it problematic that someone like me, who has never lived in Israel, I've visited several times, but I wasn't born there, I don't live there, could very easily have dual citizenship because my father was born there or purely because I'm Jewish, while somebody who's Palestinian, who grew up there, who lived there, who was forced into a refugee camp in exile in 1948 or in 1967 cannot travel back to their home. It's incredibly problematic, and it's against the Geneva Conventions with relationship to refugee rights.
Mm. That's why Code Pink has its work cut out for it. You sued Stanley for more than $1 million, and I'm getting this from the article, so it might be not 100% accurate, but is that correct?
Yeah, I think what I learned about the civil law system is that you, of course, start out asking for way more than you ever expect to get, and then you negotiate from there. So the starting offer doesn't always mean that much.
Why don't you let the listeners know what happened? Because I could read it here, but it would be better if you let them know.
Well, this is a very exciting victory, I think, this settlement. It's not every day that voices for justice get to triumph over the actions of the rich and powerful,
absolutely,
and particularly when it comes to this Israel-Palestine issue. I've been engaged in this lawsuit with an excellent team of lawyers from D.C. for the past year, and actually at the defendant, Mr. Schulster's legal team's request, we began settlement negotiations and ultimately had a court-mediated settlement date in D.C. a couple weeks ago, and we were able to, over hours of negotiating, work out an amicable settlement, which I'm very pleased with, a very good amount of money to cover my injuries, my medical bills, and any future medical bills I may have, as well as Mr. Schulster publicly apologized to me and admitted that he should have let the authorities handle the situation, that he overreacted. And in the joint statement, he acknowledges my right to hold a different view and opinion on the Israel-Palestine conflict, and that I do so in good faith, and I do the same for him, and we both acknowledge that Americans can agree to disagree peacefully. Now, that might sound like common sense, but coming from an AIPAC lobbyist, I think that is a landmark statement, because
right,
too often people who have any critique of the Israeli government or military's actions are labeled as anti-Semitic or traitors or whatnot. So I think it's really important to acknowledge that we can hold different viewpoints, but that those viewpoints shouldn't end us up getting gagged or choked.
Yeah.
And that we need to be peaceful. And I really hope that my case sends a message to other nonviolent protesters that we cannot tolerate this kind of violence, that we have to stand up for our free speech rights and protect our civil liberties. And I also hope that it sends a message to people who support the Israeli occupation and think that it's okay to do so through violence, that this is absolutely unacceptable. It's not acceptable in the United States, and it's also not acceptable in the West Bank or in Israel. And certainly we see much more severe cases of violence happening in the West Bank, whether it's settlers firing live ammunition or throwing rocks at Palestinian villages, bulldozing of homes, the tear gas and rubber bullets routinely fired on the peaceful demonstrators at the Friday protests at these tiny villages in the West Bank, and unlawful detainment and arrest of peaceful protesters. So I think that we are seeing a rise in violence on peaceful demonstrators, and it really has to stop, and I'm really glad that I did pursue this. And I feel that this is the case in which the legal system did deliver justice, and I'm really pleased about that. And I hope that it has inspired a change of heart for Mr. Schulster, and I really appreciate his apology.
Yeah, it's very significant. And at the very least, what it's going to do, I think, in the future, during wherever the presentation might be, if somebody gets up and decides to protest it, it's going to probably force people to take a step back and think a little bit, hey, should I jump this person or should I accost this person? Because look what happened to Schulster. This news is probably spreading, I think, at least throughout the Jewish community pretty widely, right?
Well, I hope so, and I'm doing my best to get the story out, and really appreciate you having me on your show so that people can hear what's happening and pass on the good word about this and let people know. And it's also important that we know our legal rights, and that there are attorneys out there like the National Lawyers Guild, the ACLU, the legal team that I had, Bernabe and Wachtel, who are willing to represent activists and help to see justice done.
Right. Do you know that if any Jewish newspapers are carrying the story right now?
I'm in touch with several reporters in the Jewish media, and I haven't seen anything get published yet, but we'll see. Folks are on deadline and hopefully writing stories as we speak.
This is something, I guess, would be right up JTA's alley, I would think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the Jewish Daily Forward and others.
Exactly.
You know, I think it's significant in the Jewish community as well, because both Mr. Schulster and I are Jewish. I would imagine that both of us come from families that survived the Holocaust, so there's a degree of trauma there, and I think that this Jew-on-Jew violence is really horrific and traumatic to see that happening. Recently, I was banned from speaking at the Jewish Library here in San Francisco because they're funded by the Jewish Federation, which opposes nonviolent tactics for justice in Palestine, such as boycott and divestment. And it was a huge issue locally, and I was speaking on a panel of Jewish activists. And ultimately, we had our event as planned, but at a different location at a synagogue. But it really highlighted the rift in the Jewish community around this issue. And there's a lot of attempts to silence any kind of dissent and to just shut up any critique and prohibit people from speaking. And I think that's actually the most caustic thing to do in the face of the severity of this issue. We need to be talking about it and discussing it and hearing all sides and opinions and really getting clear on the reality of what's going on there.
Yeah, and that's what you're doing. And again, I appreciate it. I know a lot of the listeners appreciate what you do, putting yourself out there literally in harm's way. Now, your neck, how's it doing right now?
I still have recurring pain in my neck. I've been doing a lot of physical therapy, chiropractic care, and I do stretches every day. Routinely have stiffness in my neck and lack of mobility. And I have to just be careful what I do. There's a lot of things I used to do regularly, like surfing or yoga or running, that I don't do as frequently. But I am hopeful that if I keep up with the physical therapy exercises and the rest of the regimen of getting well, recovering from this injury, that I will have normal use of my neck someday. But it's definitely not 100%, and I definitely did not think it was going to last this long.
People really have to take a step back before they do something like this. More than a year has gone by, and it still hurts.
That's true. It's been physically damaging. I think it was emotionally really traumatizing. I found frequently over the past year that I was looking over my shoulder, expecting an attack at odd moments. It's definitely altered my life. I wish that it never happened, but given that it did, I'm thankful for the tremendous amount of support and appreciation that I received in the days following the attack and the action in Congress. I received emails and text messages and tweets from people all over the world who were so appreciative that there was someone saying the truth in that moment when global media attention was on Netanyahu in Congress making this speech. And I think it could have been anyone there, and I'm glad that I had the opportunity to be there to say that message of equal rights for Palestinians, and it was great to feel the support of a huge movement. You know, I got a few hate mails, but the overwhelming amount was very supportive, and I'm very grateful for that.
Yeah, the usual self-hating Jew stuff. You asked for $1 million. What did you actually get?
I can't reveal the final amount of money that came out of the lawsuit, unfortunately, or any of the details of the settlement proceedings.
Part of the agreement?
Right.
Okay. Can you give a ballpark?
No, I could just say that it's more than I expected to get. I'm very happy with the amount.
What did you expect to get?
I would just add that I am going to be donating a portion of the amount of money from the lawsuit to an organization in the West Bank that supports legal fees and possibly also medical fees for peaceful protesters who have been arrested unlawfully and are being detained. There's tremendous rising costs and legal fees that protesters are experiencing in the West Bank. So there's an organization, the Palestinian Popular Struggle Coordinating Committee, that does excellent work supporting activists and their legal needs.
That's great, Ray. What did you expect to get?
I can't, unfortunately, talk about any of the finances of the case.
Well, congratulations. I was very excited about how you were going after this guy and the steps you were taking to reveal his identity. I remember that, and I've been following this, and it's very important, very significant, and I guess the most important thing is I hope your neck gets better. I want to thank you, Ray Abalaya, the co-director of Code Pink, and you're also with, as you said, Jewish Voice for Peace. What's your title at Jewish Voice for Peace?
I'm a volunteer activist with Jewish Voice for Peace and a founding member of our youth wing, which is called Young Jewish Proud, youngjewishproud.org. and really find that to be an amazing outlet for faith-based organizing around ending the Israeli occupation. I did want to mention also, you know, not all of us will have the opportunity to get a precious ticket to see Netanyahu in person or have an opportunity to stand up and unfurl a banner, speak truth to power in the way that I did, but there is a lot that each of us can do to make an impact and stand up for justice in Palestine and Israel. And I think the most promising campaigns are through the use of boycott and divestment tactics. And we've seen some huge victories over the last few weeks, even in these campaigns. At Code Pink, we run a campaign called the Stolen Beauty Boycott of Ahava Cosmetics, which are made in an illegal Israeli settlement. And we're refusing to buy these products that are illegally made in the settlements. Putting our money where our values are is really key and a really important way to participate. So that's the action that I would recommend to listeners who are thinking, I don't know if I would do that, but I do agree with what she's saying. What can I do? You know, visit us, stolenbeauty.org, and join the boycott.
If folks do want to get involved with the causes of Code Pink or Jewish Voice for Peace, just go to the website?
Yeah, codepink.org, and then to join the boycott, stolenbeauty.org. We had the biggest victory in our campaign to date just last week when Abigail Disney, who is the granddaughter of Roy Disney of Disney, denounced her shares of investment in the company. It turns out the Disney family actually owns 18% of this Israeli settlement company, Ahava Cosmetics. And so she's come out saying as soon as she can, she's going to divest her shares in Ahava and invest them in organizations in Palestine working for a just peace. So that's very exciting. If you want part of a successful campaign, please join us.
It's working. And is that how you say Ahava?
Ahava. A-H-A-V-A. That word means love in Hebrew, but we say there's nothing loving about an illegal occupation that strangles people from their land and livelihood.
Rahab Leah, the co-director of Code Pink, I want to thank you so much for the time you spent explaining all this to listeners, and congratulations on this very, very significant victory.
Thank you so much again, Dave, for having me on. Pleasure to be on your show.